Good morning. It's Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV FM and AM and streaming at WDEVradio.com. Vermont Public Affairs Program, and I'm your host, co-host today. Radio Vermont owner Myers Mermel is joining today. Good morning, Myers.
Good morning, Lee.
We've got a busy day at the State House, a lot coming up here because, we were trying to bring in some lawmakers today, and they're all talking about how busy they are. A lot of big decisions being made this week in Montpelier.
Yes, but we were able to get Majority Leader Joe Kowinski to join us, as well as Representative Mike Rice and Representative Gina Galfetti. So we should have a very good program. And we certainly appreciate the lawmakers that are making time to speak to the people of Vermont.
And we've got three lawmakers plus other guests today include former Vermont Auditor Tom Salmon. He is beginning a new endeavor in getting involved in conflict management and resolution. And we'll talk with the former auditor, Tom Salmon, about that. And also Tamara Matthew is joining. She is an author of a recently released book. She's out of Swanton. The book is called We Gave Up Everything, One Woman's Life in a Cult. And she talks about her 14 years inside the 12 tribes. We'll talk with Tamara also today. But our first guest this morning is Gina Galfetti, the Republican representative for Berrytown and Williamstown. Gina, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Lee?
I'm doing terrific. How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right, just chugging away down here at the State House.
Well, I bet you're getting a lot of feedback from your constituents. As somebody who represents Berrytown and Williamstown, do you hear more from, and it leans Republican as you won the district, do you hear more from your Republican constituents about what's going on in Montpelier, or do you hear more from the Democratic side?
You know, I certainly hear more from my Republican constituents. That's, you know, just I think the balance of the population in the town tends, as you said, tends to lean that way. But I do hear from my more liberal constituents as well, too, on issues that are important to them.
And are they what you're hearing from? Talk about what you're hearing from residents in general as this session continues along.
Well, I think the main thing on everybody's mind is the rising taxes in the state. You know, we've got a big problem with the education fund, and the potential for property taxes to go up to 20% is on everybody's mind. Another thing that I'm hearing a lot about is the Unaffordable Heat Act, or a.k.a. the Affordable Heat Act, but I like to call it the Unaffordable Heat Act, Lee, and the fears that people have growing around rising costs of home heating fuels and what that's going to do to their budgets. We've got a lot of folks in this state as it ages that are on fixed incomes that really can't afford something like that. And as that comes back for a check back in the legislature, we really need to be focused on nailing down what the cost is really going to be. And, you know, speculation has it going up that's potentially 70 cents per gallon, and Vermonters just can't afford that. You know, they're struggling right now with the inflation going up and rising cost of living in the state. They can't afford another tax, and quite truly a carbon tax that is going to contribute to a climate agenda that, unfortunately, you know, as folks on both sides of the aisle have noted here in the State House, is going to have no real impact on climate change, but it is going to have an impact on the tax burden and backs of Vermonters. So I think that's one of the biggest things. Public safety, of course, is a big issue.
Representative, let me ask you a question. As you entered this session, what were your legislative goals? What were your aims to accomplish?
Well, you know, I wanted to make sure that I was doing everything I could to keep taxes down. My biggest priority was to throw up some roadblocks to the climate agenda. You know, as I noted, we're not going to be able to have any impact on climate change. It's such a small state that only contributes 0.1% of the United States' total emissions. So given that, we need to reexamine things like the Unaffordable Heat Act. And, you know, this session we had the Renewable Energy Standard that's going to require that Vermont is using all renewables by 2035, I believe. And things like this just, they don't make sense because they don't accomplish the goal that, although branded to be reducing climate change, they don't accomplish that goal. So to put unreasonable fees and increases on the backs of Vermonters just doesn't make any sense. You know, that's one of the biggest things that really was on my mind coming into this session.
Well, with goals of reducing taxes and then also fighting the climate agenda, how do you think your progress has gone so far this session?
I would say that it hasn't gone well, to be honest with you, Myers. You know, I was hoping that coming into an election year that the brakes would get tapped on increasing taxes and fees, but it really does not seem to be heading in that direction. We seem to be expanding ways to tax Vermonters and expanding programs that we can't afford when we should be at a time where we're tightening our belts. I think that coming off of the last session when we still had a lot of ARPA money and federal money coming in, that the legislature has failed to make the adjustment to the new economic reality in Vermont. And it's a real detriment to Vermonters.
Well, the session isn't over. I mean, what are your hopes, your legislative hopes for the rest of the session?
Well, for the rest of the session, I'm really focused on H-289, which was the renewable energy standard. That's over in the Senate now. So I think that that bill will potentially get vetoed by the governor, and then we're going to need to come into the veto session very strong with a lot of constituent support and an organized effort to get the word out to legislators that this is not the kind of policy that Vermonters can afford. And moving forward, we need to be focused on things like climate or severe weather mitigation is really what it comes down to. Not affecting the source of the severe weather events, but to be able to actually prepare the state to be more resilient in the face of these disasters.
And on the energy policy side, also advancing is Bill 259 with the Climate Superfund. What is your opinion of that bill?
Yeah, the Climate Superfund bill is a really dangerous piece of legislation because it's going to basically pit the resources of Vermont against the resources of large energy producers in the courtroom. And the litigation that's going to stem from that is going to be extremely expensive. And the energy sector has very deep pockets, and they're going to use them. You know, this is their bread and butter. So to think that the state of Vermont is going to be able to contend with the litigation that 259 requires is completely unreasonable. It's just not going to happen that way. So with the increased litigation costs, we're going to be seeing that cost passed back on to Vermonters again.
And Representative, you're a Republican. Do you find Republicans are in the minority in the House? Do you find that Republicans are working together in the House, or are opinions sometimes fractured?
I would say for the most part, the Republicans in the House are working together. You know, there's always a few outliers in any party. The problem is that the supermajority simply does not listen to us. Our votes are not critical to the passage of legislation. So in the overall scope of supporting a healthy democracy, when you've got a supermajority like that, it makes for very unthoughtful, unplanned legislation. We've been seeing a lot of bills coming to the floor that people are offering floor amendments to these bills at a time when all of these things should have been considered in committee before the bills even hit the floor. And we're trying to improve bills on the fly, and that's just not good government.
This year, the Champlain Valley School District just approved their budget, so they will accept a 14% increase in their property tax as opposed to the original budget, which offered about a 24% hike. That's for this year. What do we know about what we can expect for projections next year? In other words, are the budgets that residents are looking at this year, which are giving a lot of people sticker shock, kind of a one-time jolt? Or is this projecting to be a consistent trend year over year from this point?
I would say that things are certainly trending upward. School budgets and school funding is something that is going to have to be a paramount priority for the session in 2025. We need to reform how we're funding education and where the money is coming from. Otherwise, things are going to keep trending upwardly.
Well, and it's one thing to restructure those taxes so that they're coming in different manners, but the bite is still going to come out of people to about the same extent, no matter which avenue it's channeled through.
Yes, absolutely.
Gina Galfetti, the representative, Republican from Berrytown and Williamstown. Gina, thank you for giving us some time here on Vermont Viewpoint this morning, and look forward to chatting again soon.
All right. Thank you, Lee. Have a great day.
Welcome back. Vermont Viewpoint, WDEV FM and AM, streaming at WDEVradio.com. Coming up later on in this hour, former Vermont Auditor Tom Salmon, who is venturing on a new effort regarding conflict resolution and conflict management. And we'll see what sort of project the former Vermont Auditor has in mind. But I've got a stretch here for open phones. If you'd like to join me, you are invited at 802-244-1777 and toll free from everywhere at 877-291-8255. Over the last couple of days, several communities have had the opportunity to re-vote on school budgets. The districts that voted Tuesday night, Champlain Valley School District voters passed their second budget proposal. The initial one was about a 24% increase. They accepted one that offers about a 14% hike in the property tax for the Hinesburg School and the communities that support CVU. But several revotes were rejected yesterday. The Milton Town School District, the Fairfax Town School District, and the Lamoille North Supervisory Union budgets were all voted down. And the Springfield School District budget was also defeated on Tuesday night. I have not heard word yet from the results from the Elmore-Morristown Unified School District, and we'll find out more about how that one came along. And, of course, folks out there, often whenever I ponder, somebody out there's got the answer to it. So if you know what happened with the Elmore-Morristown budget, pass it along. Three school districts did approve their school budgets Monday. All three of these communities were taking their first crack at the school budget after they had deferred through town meeting day. The Blue Mountain Union budget, which covers Groton, Reigate, and Wells River, passed with an increase of just under 10% over the current year. But there is a estimated 19% increase in education spending in those communities. And in Hartford or White River Junction, they approved their school budget Monday, and voters in the First Branch School District covering Chelsea and Tunbridge, they approved their school budget. And again, all those three districts were all voting on the proposed school budget for the first time this year. So those districts, well, they passed their school budgets without defeat, which was not completely rare, but it was more uncommon than had been in years past at this year's town meeting day. 244-1777, 877-291-8255. Let's head to the phones, and good morning, Michael, in Waitsfield. You're on Vermont Viewpoint.
Good morning. Very sunny, beautiful sunny day. I'm getting ready to go skiing.
Let me tell you, I am jealous already. Spring skiing in the Mad River Valley, you are living a charmed life.
There's plenty of snow still on the hill.
That's what I hear.
Anyway, Vermont is desperate for revenue. And I hear all these questions about spending too much, spending too little. I don't hear much of the legislature talking about getting more revenue. The best way for us to get more revenue, fastest way, is by increasing tourism. Now, we had a real opportunity. We had 300 more planes come into this airport on Eclipse Day. All those people should be contacted. That, you know, we're glad you were here. You saw the eclipse. It was lovely. But think of us for your summer vacation. They don't even, you don't have to tell them we're desperate for revenue. But the place to put the money and the work right now is increasing revenue all through the state. And the fastest way to do it is with tourism. We have all these great events. We have this beautiful state. And we got all these beautiful people living, 63 million people living between, say, Washington or Maryland and Montreal. I think we could double our summer tourism up here. But it has to be concentrated effort. I know the legislature always talks about how to spend more money or how to raise more taxes. But the whole effort's got to be changed to increasing revenue. That's all I'm talking about.
Thank you, Michael in Waitsfield. Appreciate the comments. You know, for me, it feels like a lot of times the folks in Montpelier think Vermont is a wealthy state. Vermont has never been a wealthy state. For hundreds of years, it's been a state full of poor people and who don't usually have a whole lot to spare. And the fact that lawmakers are coming so heavily with some big expenditure bills regarding school spending and the Global Warming Solutions Act, putting a lot of pressure on Vermonters who are worried about, well, their number one investment, being able to afford their home, and paying that tax bill is becoming more and more prominent an issue, especially this year. 244-1777, let's go back to the phones. Alan from Lincoln, you're on Vermont Viewpoint. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Lee. I hope you can hear me. I am driving today. The thing that baffles me the most is when we talk about education spending. You know, we have 83,000 students in Vermont, and we have 52 or 3 supervisory unions. I mean, I presume that means 52 or 3 superintendents with assistants. It doesn't take a whole lot of research to find, you know, other school districts in the country that have 83,000 students that are administrated by individual superintendents with 4 or 5 or 6, you know, executive deputies. Act 46 has clearly failed, and I think one of the keys to, you know, mitigating the cost of education is to put the money towards education and not towards administrators. We have a serious problem here. We need to consolidate districts. We need to consolidate leadership. And I have not heard that from Calvin Cutler on the news. I have not heard that from the legislature. So those are my thoughts. I have lots more, but we'll leave it at that for today. I hope you copied all that, Lee. Go ahead.
All right. Yeah, I did copy all that. Thanks. And thanks for checking in on that in Lincoln. I know cell service can be a little spotty there in that beautiful town. So, yeah, I'm with you on that. Folks, you know, people out there are dealing with a lot of expenditures in education, and a lot of people are taking a look at the administrative offices in these districts. And as you point out, there were how many school districts across the state of Vermont? 80-something. And you could certainly cut that down to a certain extent, and that might contain the cost for a certain event. But to me, it still feels like we're sending a lot of kids 30 miles to go on a bus ride. Transporting kids all that distance certainly is a big expenditure in that. So the idea that having schools more far away is a more effective way to educate kids, I'm not sure I buy. I'm still in favor of some sort of design that would let people get what they need. All the information is so transportable these days. Almost anything you could ever want to learn is in your own cell phone. So I'm in favor of providing folks with a reasonable curriculum that they could learn from in their own home. That would take out the transportation costs and allow folks to, you know, use the school buildings for, I don't know, something else. Housing, maybe. There's a big housing shortage in the state of Vermont, and those buildings might be usable for that. But that's a big idea, and that would be a very big ask for our state lawmakers to even consider, the idea of a total transformation of our educational system. It's a big enough lift right now to get them to consider lowering property taxes for the state of Vermont. So we've got a ways to go in that realm. 802-244-1777 is the number to join us here on Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV today. On the way this morning, Governor Phil Scott will have his news conference beginning at noon, where the reporters and media folks from the state of Vermont will pepper him with questions. We'll give you about 30 minutes of coverage with that before Brady Farkas takes over at 12:30 with the midday news service here on WDEV. On the way, coming up in the next hour, Jill Krawinski, the Democratic majority leader in the Vermont House, will discuss the issues going on in Montpelier. And Mike Rice, a Democrat from the Bennington-Rutland district in the House, will also be part of our conversation here on WDEV.
And, Lee, we may also be joined by Representative Black and Representative Krasnow if they can move out of their committees in time to join us. So it looks like we should have a very full legislative policy discussion.
All right. So plenty going on in Montpelier, but folks are taking time out to join us and you here on Vermont Viewpoint, here on the stations of Radio Vermont. Welcome back. Vermont Viewpoint, WDEV, FM and AM. You're invited to be a part of our show at 802-244-1777, toll-free 877-291-8255. We're joined right now by Tom Salmon, the former Vermont state auditor, and he's working on a new venture, and we're going to find out what that is. Tom, good morning. Welcome back to WDEV and Vermont Viewpoint.
Thanks, Lee. Can you hear me okay? I'm on speakerphone in a parking lot in the car.
All right.
Here in Connecticut. I sound okay?
Yeah, we got you pretty good. Thanks for giving us some time today. I know you're dealing with attending to some relatives down there, and I appreciate you giving us a few minutes this morning. Thank you for that. What have you been, prior to your new venture, what have you been doing since you were the state auditor?
So, thanks, Lee. When I left being the state auditor in 2013 January, I went to Washington, D.C. and was able to attain a position as a senior executive. And I spent most of the last 10 years from that point serving in the inspector general community and overseeing audits first at Health and Human Services, Obamacare, etc., and then later at Homeland Security, a lot of FEMA-related audits and so forth. And I was called up and deployed 2017 to 18 to Somalia as a CB, dirt sailor, never was on a ship. And then I was also sent back to Africa again in 2019 for 3 weeks for a special project. And then in 2020 deployed again. So I retired from federal service in 2022 and the military just a little before that. And I worked on finishing a master's in conflict resolution, negotiation, peace building through Cal State Dominguez Hills, where I got my teaching credential years and years ago. And I found that I'm really called to solution-oriented consulting, conflict consulting, resolution consulting on a variety of levels. It could be as simple as neighbors having disagreements about property lines to families having difficulty getting on the same page about property division or mom or grandma's house. And one of the fields that's emerging is there's a lot of people out there, moms and grandmas especially, that are having challenges with adult children. And these could be 25-year-olds, but there's also 30-year-olds and 40-year-olds who have problems and challenges with employment, transportation, housing, and health. And I say health meaning sometimes there's substance issues and other factors. So there's just a lot of conflict, and I did my thesis on strategies to prevent intractable family conflict, because we see things where, mom dies and one sibling only wanted the silverware and some other sibling comes in, swoops it up, takes it home, and then they never speak to each other for years. So it's kind of a boutique, merging business. Not everyone is thinking about how to resolve conflict, but what I offer and what my team offers is a solution that's lower cost and sometimes free. You know, if they don't have the ability to pay, we do pro bono, but an ability for people to get some clarity. We actually have what's called a clarity worksheet where you facilitate conversations with people about wishes and needs and you sketch it out in a very safe, and I use the word flat, fair, level table where everyone is heard, and you can sketch out a worksheet that people eventually can agree to sign off on for intended or known future events. It's really rewarding work, and and it's also with businesses, and we do training and workshops and so forth, but mainly it's conflict consultants. It's guiding people to sort things out that they've been avoiding, that they know they have to deal with.
What it sounds to me, Tom, a little bit is like you're wandering in where angels fear to tread, because, you step in between two family members about mom's jewelry collection after the death of a family, and that is a time of high tension, bitter dispute, recriminations, and, old things that have been swept under the rug reappearing in the situation. And those are situations that are very difficult to negotiate for anybody. I would think it might take some special skills to be able to tiptoe your way through a problem like that.
Yeah, Lee, it's really combustible if something has gone without any conversation or any planning, lots of assumptions, and a lot of apparent problems, not necessarily real problems. So what I try to do is get in front of that, and that's the part that people are sometimes averse to just even having. Like I have, you can call me or email me for a free consultation, and I'll kind of sketch out to people and even offer them a little bit of a roadmap to get the band together. Because typically in a family, there's one person either who lives close to the family locally or whatnot, or there's one captain sort of the siblings. And if that person contacts me, then I can set up what I call some ground rules and very safe dialogue. And that's kind of what I got through my training, was the difference between getting people to work together and feel safe, that they have an honest broker, is one thing. But some of the work that I've done is around really sensitive discussions about whether it's community policing, and this was all online in terms of Zoom. We would have community policing conversations in Los Angeles, or voting rights, or different topics that people have some very strong opinions on. But if you set the stage and the ground rules and you get people to commit to at least listen to learn, then next thing you know, you can find some common ground, and you realize people aren't really as different as they think they are if they can just have a calm conversation up front. But like you said, if you wait too long, then emotions can get inflamed and disagreements and misunderstandings, because no one has taken any time to talk about these things. Elder care, dementia in the family, property issues, things that blow up that really don't need to. You have an ill parent, and like my sisters and I, we had a conversation about my dad's wishes. He's almost 92. He's in Brattleboro. What's it going to look like when he passes? And, what are his wishes? Where does he want to be buried? And what are some of the details of that? And who wants to speak? And how does that look like? And we had that call. We had a Zoom call. And it was wonderful, because we're not all the same personalities. There's four of us kids. But everybody had a chance to weigh in what their desire was. And one sister in particular was just grateful. We asked her if she wanted to speak or say what she wanted her role to be. And so we depressed and pulled and drained so much anxiety and gas out of a situation. And that's the most fun, is trying to make a crooked road straight if people are safely willing to just have the conversation. It could be a Zoom call. It could be a kitchen table conversation. It could be a phone conference call. And it's just a series of steps. And it's not that many steps to actually get to a clarified point of expectation, and then you can refine it, and ideally you can have some kind of clarity document that people can feel generally good enough to sign off on as the intention of what's going to happen, whether it, like I said, whether it's neighbors, property, or firewood issues. There's all kinds of interesting things that people don't realize, that there are people like me and professionals that I work with, cohorts, and mental health professionals also. We don't try to do everything, but we try to wrap around the hot points and cool them down. And then hopefully you feel real good when a family can go through a difficult challenge. Like right now, the reason I'm at the hospital is my dear friend and a lot of friends in Vermont was my deputy, Joe Uhas, at the auditor's office. And he has a rare form of cancer, spindle cell sarcoma. It's like a floating, tumor. And he's on the ropes, but I've been working with his family to kind of sort some things out about his house, his assets, his intentions, and things like that. And it's really draining off a lot of pain and gas, and they can focus on saying goodbye to him. And as a side note, Jim Douglas, Governor Douglas, class act, he called and talked to Joe yesterday before he went on to the morphine drip and had a good chat. And Joe had was very memorable because we worked closely with the governor's office on a lot of things. And the governor would help us with the state audit. He would, when we kicked off the annual audit, he would speak to the commissioners and the heads of the departments and convey how important it is for us to have clean audits and not pay for extra repeated audits for too many findings. And Joe introduced him to the Governor Douglas. He says, "I'm Tom's Republican friend." And, so we always joke about that. But even families, I mean, I'm not trying to be everywhere for everyone, but there's just got to be a playbook for folks to realize they don't have to lawyer up. I mean, you see a family member suing another one over something because a house was left in the name of one of the siblings, and the parent dies, and then all of a sudden, the other three want that house sold. They want their fourth.
Yes.
And so you everybody has stories about, oh, don't get me started, or, like I said, I may have said in my press releases, there's people who say to me, yeah, that sibling lives 2,000 miles away, and that's not far enough. I hope I never see him again. And life is short. Like, really? We got to make enemies out of our siblings or friends or neighbors, or, people we went to high school with. It's avoidable, I guess is what I'm saying.
Talking with Tom Salmon, what is your new venture called, Tom?
Yeah, the new venture is called theflattable.com, and there's a story behind it. But theflattable.com is a conflict consulting business, but it also has workshops and trainings, and I do some motivating speeches and things, little workshops that bring people together and build trust and in the workplace as well as organizations, but mainly dealing with families and also issues around elder care, property, and wherever there needs to be a conversation, at least an initial one, to sort things out. But theflattable.com gives you all the info.
We're talking with Tom Salmon here on Vermont Viewpoint on WDEV. And, Tom, I want to ask you a couple of questions about conflict resolution. Let's say you have two aggrieved parties, and after hearing their cases, in your own mind, one of them is clearly in the right and one of them is clearly in the wrong, but dug in so hard. How do you, when you've heard both sides and you know that one side is definitely standing on more solid ground, how do you handle that?
Well, the key to entrenched parties, because most of them are, if you enter into, like, if let's say the point person of a family, the alpha dog, sister or brother, calls me in because there's conflict. I don't get into collecting all that information one-sidedly from one party. I create a collective meeting where I go in like I'm a plain blank slate. And we start to go around, we set ground rules, and you start to bleed out what the real interests are, what the real wants are, and you start to try to put a pie together. And the first step is not to get to home base. The first step is to get to first base. And it just establish the identity of a perception of a team. So if you can create, even with the most entrenched parties, I've seen it. where you create the perception that there is a team and there is going to be an event, i.e. mom is in the nursing home and she's not got a long period of time to go. And you sketch out, hypothetically, what each party is after. And then you start to do some horse trading in the second phase to get them to second base. And you have to also be the sort of sober driver that lets everyone know, hey, look, there's a finite amount of resources, if it's over that. And then, you know, this is the reality of how this will go. And it can go one of two ways. You can get lawyers involved. You can sue each other. You can do this. But the event is going to dictate the actions of a must-find resolution. I tell them I was the Navy CB dirt sailor 21 years. We had a motto, the difficult, we do it at once. The impossible takes a little longer. You just convey to these people that there is a solution and decisions are imminent. You have to participate. If you can't get to first base and at least get a willingness to participate, then this particular party may end up just having the lawyer up, each of them. And that's unfortunate, because the other strategy around that is we deal with seniors who may have in good conscience said, I am giving all of my resources to my four kids split evenly. Well, you've got three living out of state. You got one who's kind of a caregiver who's done a tremendous amount of work. You've got one that's like built half the house or addition, and then you're going to split it four ways. Well, it's incumbent upon the senior actually clarify a little bit more about their wishes and not burden the four kids with, oh, you've split it when I'm gone, when there's all these other little scenarios. The caregiver person who spent 10 years living in the house taking care of the mom may want the house, and there may be some arrangement of fairness. There's always a middle part of a deal, but you don't get to second base if you can't at least get the team concept together at first and then get the wishes and sort of who wants what. And you find out that sometimes people bluff. Like I had a situation where a brother-in-law was inserting himself into a four sibling family and wanted to buy half of the house. And when push came to shove, when he was finally like sat down about what does everyone really want, he backed off. The bully got punched in the face, but not with any force. It was just the clarity of, okay, you want half of the expenses of this house that you're living in Florida, but it's up in Vermont, and you want this, and he says, well, you know what, I got a big bucket list of places I want to visit, and actually I don't want to spend that much time in Vermont. So boom, the balloon is popped, and all of a sudden that is a non-issue. Then you're back to the main event, and it's taking a piece of fat, or taking a piece of meat that's got fat around it and pieces to it, and trimming that down and trying to get people to objectively, almost like we're putting it up on a screen, and objectively talking about a situation as factual and as real as possible with nuances. There's trade-offs. Right. Those are some of the examples of when you have a really, I'll tell you, when you have two entrenched parties and you say, these are probably the estimated lawyer and legal fees you'll encumber in this process, is that worth it? You don't say it to threaten them. You just try to give them, you try to be an honest broker and you try to get them to have a fair commitment to reality.
And drive home perhaps the point that if they don't resolve this conflict in front of you, both parties will wind up losing.
Yeah, they will. And I've seen it. I've done some cooperative divorce work where I have literally put together the assets, split the assets in half, and then one party did not really convey the difficulty of this divorce and would not follow through on dissolving it, and it went off to attorneys and it cost both parties $10,000-$15,000 each. And then at the end, it turns out they went back to my spreadsheet and distributed the assets the way it was laid out. But I learned more in my training, getting my master's, that you have to disarm and identify the emotional parts of where people are at. It's not just a spreadsheet. It's a spreadsheet plus hearing people out. Sometimes they just want to be heard, but then taking that area of want, concern, need, and then being able to package it and say, this is an imminent event. This divorce is going to happen, or this sale of mom's house is going to happen. But so we need to, if you want to mitigate a burden of unnecessary expense, you can do that. And you can do it yourself. I'm semi-retired. I don't need this job per se, but I love the idea of making crooked roads straight. And when people realize they're dealing with somebody who doesn't have to be here, I'm here because there's an easier way to go. And we have an old saying when I was working in Somalia and Africa that, like, there's no straight lines, but it's fun when it works. It's fun when you take a ball of snarled, like, tangled yarn and are able to have people start to see it get unscrewed and straightened out. And that's a passion.
I got about 2 minutes left here, Tom. So folks that want to reach out and if they're dug in with a conflict that they can't resolve, reach out to you. And you can be contacted through theflattable.com?
Yeah, they can. Or my number, which is on there, is 802. It's 535-1555. I'd be happy to take their call and give them some free advice, set them on their way, tell them what we do, and increase the peace. You know, that's the mission, is to increase the peace and to strengthen relationships, both family, business, organizations, and give them some tools. You know, it's pretty basic, but it just takes the development of a team concept, even if it's a perceived team. And hey, you grew up with these people. You are on their team, whether you like it or not. And why don't you just do the right thing for whoever the parent is, or whatever the issue is, if it's some asset, just, you know, fight fair. So we have a fight fair policy. The flat table is denoting a flat, fair, level table where everyone is heard, everyone is listened to, and everyone's concerns and needs and wants and fears are out in the open, and then we make a cookie. You know, if you can bake one cookie, you can bake a dozen.
Tom Salmon with theflattable.com. And Tom, I want to thank you. I'd never heard the expression dirt sailor before regarding your experience in Ethiopia. I'd like to ask you more about that, but time will not allow today. So we'll get together sometime again soon.
Oh, love to. So grateful I was a CB. So many great memories and experiences. Just never was on a ship. 21 years, dirt sailor.
All right. Thank you, Tom Salmon, former Vermont State Auditor. TheFlatTable.com is where you can find out more about his new conflict resolution venture. We're heading back to the State House in Montpelier after World and National News here on Vermont Viewpoint, WDEV, FM and AM, WDEVRadio.com.